Welcome everyone to the Macro Hive week ahead. It's been a very busy week for us on the desk as well as all of our clients. So I'm very happy to have Dominique here to talk us all through it. Dominique, how are you?
Oh, well, thank you, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, but it's just started raining in London, so that's ruined my Friday evening.
Oh.
We probably shouldn't mess around here. It's been a very busy week and everyone's probably got the same thing on their mind, the conflict going on in the Middle East. Now, without getting into too many details of the war side of it, there are plenty of military experts out there. I think what would be good to focus on are the two issues that the markets are trying to deal with, which is number one, the duration of this conflict. Originally, the market seemed to be pricing in a short conflict similar to last year, but the rest of that obviously changing. And then the second thing that they're concentrating in on is the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, what's your take on both of those?
So as like you, I'm no military expert. However, I've followed the news on the duration. The administration initially talked about a few days war, but yesterday it's talked about several weeks, and eventually the defense secretary, or the war secretary rather, talked about 100 days war. So we're starting to talk about duration that are economically significant. You know, I always say economic time is slower than market time. You want to change your investment, you just press a button while people's spending patterns take time to change. So to me, an economically significant duration of the war is beyond a couple of months. And it looks like this is what we are dealing with.
And what about the Strait of Hormuz? I mean, it's before it was obviously just taken as granted a shipping lane, ships go through it. Now, obviously, that's not true. The reports are out that basically nothing is going through there. How much importance are you putting on this?
Well, this is perhaps the key variable, more than all the military noise, because this is really what's going to drive oil prices. You know, Viresh explained really well on our webinar that if the straits remains closed, prices could spike, you know, to really high level, 150. The US announced measures to reopen the strait, insurance provided by the Development Finance Corporation, Navy escorts. This was a couple of days ago, and it looks like in practice, those might be difficult to implement. For instance, in terms of providing enough insurance cover, it looks like the administration would have to go to Congress, excuse me, to get additional money. And from what I'm hearing, at this current time, it doesn't have the votes in the Senate, so that's probably not likely to work. So it looks like these plans may not have much influence on oil prices after all.
Okay, and I mean, we should probably concentrate on the economic impact of this all. And we can obviously feed forward into the CPI numbers, which are going to come out next week. But the big news that we've had today is what seems like really, really bad NFP numbers, at least on the headline. What do you take from those numbers?
Yeah, overall, it's a bad number, perhaps not as terrible as the data suggests. I mean, it was minus 92,000 against expectation of 55,000, but some of that was a strike of nurses in New York State. So, you know, the bulk of employment growth for the past few years has been in health and social services. In January, it was up 116K. Last month, it contracted by 19K. So that played a role. But overall, so there were also little data points showing resiliency. I mean, you know, the data is never going to give you perfectly clear picture. But overall, I think, you know, this is weakness. The recovery we saw in January clearly did not extend this month. I would add that the famously controversial birth model, birth and death model, added about 90K to the headline number. I mean, it's non-seasonally adjusted NFP, but still, I mean, it definitely boosted the number. So, not great.
And I mean, what do you make out of the wages numbers? They were a touch stronger than expected, or is there something more to this?
But you need to look at the whole trend. And even though it was a touch longer, I published on a chat a multi-year chart of wages. It's still consistent with a downtrend. And given the overall weakness of the labor market, which, by the way, is not just today's release, but if you look at claims, you know, long-term unemployment claims, so it's a different data source, they are stabilizing, even though long-term unemployment is rising and a rising share of people have lost their benefits. So it's a really, this long-term, this continuing claim is a bad signal. It's a negative signal. You look at the questions on the labor market in consumer surveys. It's the same thing. It points at weaknesses. So today's, you know, NFP, it adds to my conviction of what I call a wobbly labor market. It looks kind of stable superficially, but if you dig and look at the details, it's actually fairly weak.
So just to confirm, it's not enough probably to scare the Fed, but it'll keep them convinced that they're on the right path, which is some sort of easing.
So for this month, the Fed is going to do nothing, tell us that they will wait and see. It will be interesting to see how they describe the risk. My view is that they will very much follow the lines of what Williams, the New York president, permanent FOMC voter, and close to Chair Powell, which is the long-term impact in inflation is likely to be limited. Core inflation, not headline, obviously. Impact on uncertainty could be quite substantial.
And I mean, just on those inflation numbers, obviously, oil skyrocketed. Brent crude's now, what, around $90 a barrel. What's going to happen to CPI? I mean, are the Fed going to pay attention to this?
Of course. So headline CPI will go up. That's mechanical. The big question is what happens to core CPI. And there, my view is that, you know, if you look at the last two oil shocks, just before the GFC and during the pandemic, in the pandemic oil shock, core inflation followed headline inflation higher, while just before the GFC, core inflation remained flat. I think we're more likely in the pre-GFC situation, because the labor markets were very different. In 2021-22, there were labor shortages, so workers were able to extract higher wages to offset the increase in prices. But just before the GFC, the labor market was roughly balanced. And as a result, nominal wage growth did not pick up. Real wage growth fell. So that's how the oil shock was absorbed in a non-inflationary manner. And if you look at the data on the labor market, I think we are very much in the pre-GFC situation rather than the pandemic.
And just for argument's sake, let's assume that this conflict does continue. It's, you know, it continues into, let's just push the barrel then. So it continues into the second half of the year and oil goes above $100 a barrel. Are you still sticking on that claim that, you know, that it won't feed into to core CPI?
Absolutely. I think it could very well tip the US economy into recession. Because if you look at consumption is 70% of the US economy. It's been flattening out, and that's because real income, real consumer income, has been flat for the past two quarters. And what has kept inflation going is a decrease in the savings rate. But we are getting close to historical lows with the savings rate. And also, if people become more risk averse, they are going to pull in their horns and spend less, basically.
So actually, you have a double tap.
Yeah.
So actually, if the conflict does continue and oil prices go higher, the way that the Fed are going to digest this is actually from a more of a growth scare angle than an inflation scare angle.
Well, I mean, that was a playbook in 2007. And remember that the GFC became the consensus only in the middle of 2008. That's when you start long-term be collapsing. Remember, Bernanke famously said in March 2007 that the real estate bubble consequences would be contained. Unemployment didn't start increasing until 2008, early 2008. So the Fed started to cut in 2007, even though headline inflation was going up, because it could see that core inflation was very stable, and I think it was worried by economic weaknesses. So if you read, you know, their statement, it's clear they didn't expect the GFC until close to when things started to fall apart until H2 of 2008. So I think this time around, it's not unreasonable to expect the Fed to follow the 2007-08 playbook.
Okay, so let's just round this up then. I mean, first, what's your expectation for the Fed for the rest of this year?
So I'm still sticking to my three cuts. I want to see more data on oil prices, on the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, if the conflict gets resolved, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we will all have had just a big scare, but nothing lasting. So not changing my view. And then if it lasts and we end up in Viresh, you know, right tail scenario, very high oil prices, I think we will switch from good news cuts driven by disinflation, to bad news cuts.
And how far could the Fed go then?
It depends really on their views on the economy. I mean, the key variable to look at, and we've had a client telling us that quality of that variable is not great, which is just this morning, the unemployment rate. And I agree 100%, but that's all we have. So if we start seeing fast increases in unemployment, which we are not at this stage, then I think the Fed will get really worried about a recession and could cut more than I expect. But for now, I'd rather stick to my three cuts call until I get enough data, including quality data, to change my view.
No, that's been great, Dominic, and thank you for joining me on the week ahead. It's good to get your overall picture for what could happen in sort of such a crazy time. And thank you, everyone, for watching. We'll be back next week. Thank you.